What's going on, Suns fans? Justin here, and with me, as always, is my podcasting partner, Paul.
Cut it out.
And welcome to this episode of Fanning the Flames, your one and only Phoenix Suns podcast that is made for the fans. That's you guys, by the fans, that's us.
It's been a busy start to the week.
Busy start to the week, indeed. But Paul, wait one moment, please. As always, intro and outro music provided by Oceans Over Airplanes. Check them out over on oceansoverairplanes.com. Make sure to give us a follow. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at So Says Jay. Paul.
At Dervish of World.
And the pod is at Fan the Flames NBA. So, as you already said, busy start to the week. We're checking in a little bit early because we're just so excited. So excited.
to talk
about the big news of the week. And Paul, what is that news?
We don't have a general manager anymore.
We do not have a general manager anymore. Like I said, we were so excited to talk about this. Plus, we couldn't let all the other pods just have all the fun jumping on it much quicker than we did. But hey, just kind of par for the course for us. So
yeah, pretty much.
As Paul alluded to, Ryan McDonough is no longer the general manager of the Phoenix Suns. And I'd like to note that since separation of his employment with the team, if you will, the Suns are 1-0.
Got that post-GM
Got
bump.
Got that post-GM bump against
post-GM
the world
preseason bump.
Champion Golden State Warriors. Gotta love it. And on top of that, we've also got all indications showing that James Jones, who's been tagged as the interim GM, may ultimately be the full-time GM for the Phoenix Suns. Where we're at on that.
Where could that go wrong?
And right. And what he's going to have on his plate as he steps in for McDonough. So initial impressions, Ryan McDonough, no longer the GM of the Phoenix Suns.
I mean, initial impression obviously was shock because, I mean, there was no real kind of lead up to it. It just kind of came out of the blue. I was at home. I was actually coming home because I was dealing with some car trouble and had to stop in to change clothes. And I checked Twitter and I saw it and I immediately called you because this is something we needed to talk about.
You did call me, and A, that was, I feel like, a lot of detail when you could have just said, you know, we didn't hear about how you had to come home to change your clothes and all that. But well, at any rate, you did call me. And by the way, when you called me, I immediately was like, oh shit, what happened? So I picked up the phone.
Because I don't call him much.
I don't remember the last time he called me. Thankful that nobody that we know was dead.
Yeah.
And like you, a little bit surprised by this whole McDonough firing. I mean, just based on the timing alone. So
yeah, but it was definitely out of the blue. I wasn't able to really kind of dig into stuff because I was dealing with that car trouble, as I said, until a little bit later. So I kind of played catch up on a lot of it, whereas I didn't think most of the rest of Suns Twitter and NBA Twitter in general was reacting in the moment. I kind of just was able to digest that over like the next couple hours once I was able to get back into it. I mean, you know, there's two sides to the coin. I mean, one, and I think it has been discussed to death just from the standpoint of, one, McDonough had kind of put himself in a position that he probably shouldn't still have had the job as the Suns GM. But at the same time, was this really the best time to do it? I mean, when Sarver was on Gambo, or I almost said Gambo and Ash, Burns and Gambo.
Where do you get that from?
I think it was, was that Monday or Tuesday? Monday afternoon?
Monday.
He said there's no real good time to fire a GM, which that makes sense. I mean, I understand that, but I mean, there's no good time, but there are worse times, and going right into the season, probably not the best time. I mean, you let him make all of the decisions for the year, you know, and yeah, he was still working on getting a point guard, and yeah, he was struggling because obviously the Suns had not a lot of leverage in that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Jimmy Butler situation was kind of holding up a lot of things, because I know a lot of the teams that had potential trade pieces for to fill that point guard spot were teams who were potentially involved in that Jimmy Butler deal. So I could see that that might have been holding that up a little bit. So it just seemed like Sarver just got impatient. Maybe that blowout loss to Portland, for whatever reason, just kind of put, like, he snapped watching that game and just decided to pull the trigger. I mean, he seems to be a pretty impulsive guy from all accounts when it comes to this kind of stuff. So that's kind of where it stands for me. Justin?
That's all you have to say about that?
That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Like I said earlier, I was surprised when I heard it, primarily just because of the timing aspect of it. And the Suns have to stop doing this. Head coach, two games into the season. GM, not even quite to the end of the preseason. But regardless, after I kind of got over that aspect of it, just the what, why now, what happened, it makes sense. I mean, I'm not mad that he's fired, I guess, right, you can say. And I've never been quiet about my adoration for Ryan McDonough. I understand as a GM he's had a number of shortcomings. He's put the team in situations that perhaps they didn't need to be in, but because of his
mismanagement,
his lack of interpersonal skills, yes, the ability to connect clearly with another human being, he's clearly lacking in that capacity. But at the same time, he leaves the Suns right now with a good young group of guys, a good young core of players,
exactly,
which is what we all wanted to have, you know, since, you know, the past few years while the Suns have been tanking, we've been hoping to climb up in the lottery and all of that. But again, take the bad with the good with McDonough. He still hasn't produced a winning team since that team that almost made the playoffs.
Right. I mean, I think the only thing I can really couch with that is how much of his lack of production was Sarver not putting him in a position to succeed, constantly changing his mandate of he wants the team to win now versus letting McDonough fulfill his vision and whatnot, and that constantly shifting of the goal over time just may have caused for some of those sporadic moves, some of those trades or draft picks or whatnot. I mean, yes, I'm not gonna lie, McDonough did make some mistakes. I mean, the whole Dragic IT situation, huge mistake. I'm for some reason blanking on other ones right now, but I know there are others. The Brandon Knight situation, that's a huge mistake. Markieff Morris situation,
there you go,
huge mistake. But one thing I did want to kind of run through real quick, because I think because the Suns are still coming out of the rebuild, I think he kind of gets shit on a little bit for his drafting. Just because, I mean, he took some swings, he took some risks, but I took a look today and just really kind of ran down, starting from 2013 when McDonough came in, because that was the same time Sam Hinkie came in. That was the start of the process for the 76ers. And the Suns, at the same time, if I think we all remember, the plan was for the Suns to kind of be in lockstep with the Sixers, being they were the West Coast version of the tank squad. And then they just happened to win that season, which kind of derailed things. So I just kind of went side by side, year by year, just kind of looked at the drafts and just really kind of wanted to take those two teams' draft selections in, because I feel like the McDonough's still getting shit on because they're still in the rebuild, while the 76ers have kind of come out of the rebuild. So everybody has kind of brushed to the side all their misses. So just starting at the top, that 2013 year, the Suns obviously drafted Alex Smith and Archie Goodwin, you know, those pillars of the Suns' history, neither of which are still on the team. But at the same time, the 76ers brought in Nerlens Noel and Michael Carter-Williams, also not on their teams. And across the board, none of those guys have had stellar NBA careers at all. One of them's not in the league, and the other three are kind of just hanging on a little bit. Moving on to 2014, that's the first time Philly really hit. They got They got Joel Embiid, who did end up being injured, which actually probably helped their situation a little bit. I think if Embiid had been healthy from jump, they may be in a worse situation because their picks would have been worse. The Suns, on the other hand, because they had had that successful season, they ended up with TJ Warren as kind of the prize pick. Both guys still on the team. The Sixers also got Dario Saric this year, who has been productive and helpful for their team. The rest of the Suns draft were not so great with Tyler Ennis and Bogdan. So Philly clearly won that year. Are you all right, dude?
I can't. I'm sorry. Your breathing is getting so labored because you're speaking so much. And all I could hear was you inhaling.
My wheezing?
So, yeah, sorry.
My bad.
Go on.
All right. So that break actually probably helped.
That's what I was going for. You're welcome.
Thank you. So we move on to 2015. That's the Devin Booker year. Philly drafted Jahlil Okafor, who, again, another player who's barely hanging on in the league, at number three. So Suns clearly won out that year. And even still, that was a huge miss on Philly's part because other players that they could have drafted with that pick, obviously Porzingis at four, Miles Turner, Booker, Terry Rozier, though just a couple names of players that were drafted after Jahlil Okafor who are very productive in the league right now. So that was clearly a win for the Suns. Moving on to 16, clearly a win for Philly. Obviously, that was a Dragan Bender and Marquese Chris year. Chris is no longer around. Bender is, we're not sure if he's going to even be a rotation player at this point. And the Sixers obviously got Ben Simmons out of that. Again, injured player probably helped them along in their situation because it led into another high pick the following year. The other guys that Philly got were very late in the draft, and none of them really mean anything. But one thing I do really want to point out about that draft year compared to the previous year where Philly really whiffed on Okafor, there really was nothing else in that draft after Bender and Chris. I mean, really the best options were Buddy Hield, Jamal Murray, who legitimately probably is better than Bender and was drafted before Chris. And the rookie of the year was Malcolm Brogdon, who wasn't even drafted till the second round. So, I mean, that draft was shit after the top three picks. So, I mean, McDonough took some swings, hopefully hitting on something, but at the same time, there's not really much production about that draft either. So I kind of, though Philly did win because obviously they had one of those top three picks, I don't really fault McDonough for that draft in any way. It hurts in the moment. 2017, this one's really kind of a to-be-determined draft because the two main players for this are Josh Jackson and Markelle Fultz. Jackson's still a project. We're still trying to figure out. He's shown a lot of good flashes, but he hasn't really brought it all together with consistency. And obviously, Markelle Fultz had the shooting issues, so we're hoping he can actually be a player. And then we come to 2018, which I'm leaning is the Suns win just because the Suns had a number one pick and Philly didn't have a pick till 16 because of the Mikal Bridges trade. So the Suns are coming out with DeAndre Ayton, who has really shown some good things so far in preseason, really shown what those of us who were proponents of his drafting saw in him as a player. And Mikal Bridges, obviously he's injured right now, but he should be back, and hopefully we can get him into the rotation. Whereas Philly has Zaire Smith and Landry Shamet at 16 and 26. Zaire's hurt. I think he's out for a significant amount of time. Is he out for the season?
I don't believe it's for the season, but I believe it's for a big chunk of it.
And Landry Shamet, he scored 1 point in their last game. So that's the draft leading up till now, or the drafts for those two teams up till now. The Suns have 6 of their 11 players drafted still on their team. Philly has 8. But granted, they had more picks in more recent years, so that kind of makes sense. Whereas the Suns had a few less picks. Philly had 7 in the last 3 years. Suns only had 5. So just from that standpoint, if the Suns had started their tanking in 13 the way the Sixers had, they may be in a better position. Because if you really push the timeline back, the Philly started in 2013, didn't really get good till 2017. It took them 5 years to turn that around. So if the Suns really didn't start till 2015, and that wasn't even really intended because they tried to win, but just because of a bunch of injuries, they ended up sucking and tanking, and they really went into tank mode. 2019 is really the year where they really should be starting to turn it around. So from the standpoint of Sarver throwing in the towel with McDonough now, it's impulsive. It's he's so such a short-sighted move. It didn't allow McDonough to see his vision through. But then again, Sam Hinkie got thrown out a year before they really hit there too. So it kind of does really track the two teams in a way. So 2019 is going to be a good year for the Suns.
Maybe that's why Sarver did it. He was like, I got it. This is all falling into place perfectly. Now it's time for the GM to go.
Well, I mean, you see that in businesses all the time. You get the guy, the turnaround guy, who like is good at the turnaround, gets you, clears out all the muck and gets you moving forward, but he's not really the guy to propel you into the future. So maybe James Jones is.
Right, and we're in all likelihood going to be finding that out. A couple things I want to touch on in relation to what you had laid out. And the first is just the overall idea of the rebuilding process that Philly went through being an analogy to what the Suns are going through just a couple of years pushed back. I think a lot of Suns fans recognize that. I mean, I know I do, I know you do, and I know a lot of folks that I speak to who are Suns fans do, and I think it probably means the majority of Suns fans do. The one person who doesn't seem to get that, though, is Robert Sarver. I mean, like you said, McDonough and Sarver had come out and said this before, that they were going to aim for 2019-2020 to be when the Suns are competitive again. Sarver said that in front of a group of season ticket holders, I want to say it was before last season. And to flip the switch in 1 year from saying, okay, 19 or 20, to saying, we're not doing enough now to win. Now's the time. The rebuild is over.
We haven't started playing games to see if the moves that were made actually worked.
Right. And it is impulsive. And it's just, I think, is indicative of what Sarver is as an owner. And that's just something we as Suns fans have to deal with. Because much as everybody likes the Sarver out, hashtag Sarver out thing, which I'm sure is going to come back now.
Yeah.
It's his team, and we have to deal with it. And the one thing that I don't doubt in Sarver is his commitment to wanting to win. So
doesn't mean he's good at winning.
You just kind of hope at some point that means that he starts recognizing what he's to do. But at the same time, you know, we still do have a young roster. Maybe there is a move that James Jones will be able to pull off that McDonough wasn't able to pull off to land us a point guard, and we'll get into that more later.
I just hope we don't end up with Jerry Jones.
Like literally with Jerry
Jones? No, just like the NBA version of Jerry Jones. Like, I really want to win, but I want to be involved so much, but I'm not actually good at that part.
But in your world, would Sarver actually name himself the GM like Jerry Jones?
He did for a year.
That's true. Would he do it again?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't think he's that egotistical, but I think he involves himself enough that he can submarine.
Sure. And, you know, in terms of, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, you had alluded earlier to the Portland game. It's the point guard thing. I mean, that's really what it has to boil down to. And Sarver said, I believe it was when he was on Burns and Gambo, he said, quote, it culminated where we were heading into the summer. That doesn't really make sense, but that's what the quote says. We discussed a number of opportunities I felt like were realistic in terms of what progress would look like. And ultimately for me, the rate of progress wasn't there where I thought it needed to be. That to me just screams point guard, because McDonough made other moves this summer, which people looked very highly on. The Ariza signing, veteran presence, guy can still play, obviously. He's been balling out recently. And it's a one-year deal that doesn't affect future cap space. Drafting DeAndre Ayton was the deal for Mikal Bridges, possibly an overpay, maybe, but we won't know because it's a draft pick that's a couple of years away still. So whatever. And ultimately, the one thing that was lacking was that point guard. So if Sarver's saying it related to where we've been and where we're heading into the summer, then that tells me that it's all about that one small aspect, which again evidences Sarver's impulsiveness.
But another way to look at it, though, is I'm wondering if it has to do with the Jimmy Butler situation, in that the Suns have for the last number of years been looking for that James Harden type trade, that time where they can cash in their chips for that superstar, and they've had situations come up. There was a Kyrie deal that was potentially supposedly on the table of the number four pick and Eric Bledsoe. There was there are a number of players that came up. Kawhi, mm-hmm. who was there. And now you have Jimmy Butler on the table, who's arguably a superstar in the league. And maybe it's just like, these players keep coming available and we're not in the conversation. Why are you not getting us in the conversation? And then, so it could be some of that he's just like, we may end up with Jimmy Butler is what I'm getting to.
You just named three trade scenarios, complaining that the Suns aren't getting the conversation, citing all of them as ones where the Suns were in conversations.
Right, but, okay,
and they
didn't
involved
close
like
the
three biggest trade. Okay, there you
didn't,
go. Thank
didn't
you.
Close the deal.
And that clarification is much help.
Sorry.
Continue.
But so it could be that in conjunction with the point guard situation, but it's like there's a blue chip player on the market. Why are we? Because in this case, we're really not in the conversation outside of maybe being peripherally. Why are we not in that conversation? Why are we not using our assets to acquire that proven superstar?
So are you saying that Ryan McDonough was fired because he wasn't aggressive enough in getting Jimmy Butler?
Maybe. I'm just saying.
You heard it here first, folks.
I guess it's all speculation right now. Because everybody, like,
and it will always be speculation.
The timing of the point guard thing is because that seems a little bit more small potatoes to me. There's players out there. You can make a justification of why it hasn't happened in the short term. Like I said before, with regards to maybe the Jimmy Butler trade kind of holding up the situation. But again, it may be bigger than that. And obviously, it's a culmination of a number of things that. I think McDonough was trying to stick to his plan and constantly butting heads with Sarver, who's trying to accelerate said plan. And at a certain point, Sarver, being the owner, was like, I'm sick of butting heads with you. Peace.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's all speculation and it will always be speculation.
Until something happens in the next week or two when we see, like, do we severely overpay for a point guard? Do we have Jimmy Butler? What happens?
If we end up with Jimmy Butler in a week, I might actually turn in my son's fan card. And I mean that. And I mean that when I say I meant that in a very non-committal way, just for the record, because I don't know that I could still, but regardless, I can't see that happening. So we're just going to not even talk about that. Let's move on, though, to the fact that the Suns are, in fact, 1-0 since the McDonough firing.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch, especially being that it was preseason, but it's against the defending champs,
mm-hmm.
so it's nice to see the Suns stepping up. Even with a depleted roster of the defending champs, you still have two MVPs who are the guys playing on the court. Klay Thompson sat out, Iguodala sat out, Draymond Green sat out, but those two guys should have been able to run over the Suns by themselves, basically, and they didn't.
Because they weren't there? Oh, you're talking about the guys who are playing. Sorry. I was like, you went from very positive to very negative all of a sudden.
No, yeah, Durant and Curry should have been able to just kind of run over the Suns.
Yeah, and not to go down that negative tangent, but they only played for 24 minutes each also. But let's just talk about the positives. And those positives were what we saw on the court from the Suns. Ayton had, while not his most impressive game of the preseason so far, he had another solid game with 17 points, 18 points, 7 rebounds, 7 for 11 from the field, so high field goal percentage like we're getting used to seeing from
him.
So
4
for 5 from the line, couple steals and a block. And then we have Ariza and Anderson finally starting to seem like they're finding their stroke from three.
Well, not just Ariza and Anderson, the team as a whole kind of was at least hitting some.
I'm a little more interested in Ariza and Anderson personally.
Yeah.
And really the rest of the team, well, yeah, they were, let's see, 6 for 18. So still better than what they've been doing.
33% is a lot better than what we were doing, yeah.
At any rate, Ariza went 4 for 8 from deep. Anderson went 4 for 7 from deep. A little good and bad, probably mostly bad, I think people will be seeing at least. Josh Jackson had another rough game from the field, only shooting 3 for 12, but had 5 assists. And the one thing that I continue to see with Jackson is this connection, this chemistry that he has with DeAndre Ayton, because those two seem to find each other both ways, back and forth, at the most opportune times. And I think as that chemistry continues to grow, it's going to be something that's going to be very exciting, very fun to watch as a Suns fan, and be very productive for the team.
I also like to see the assist to turnover ratio was a lot better than in some previous games. I mean, granted, part of that might have been that some guys are finally starting to hit shots. But they had 29 assists as a team to only 17 turnovers. And like in particular, like Jackson had 5 assists to only 2 turnovers. So that's really good to see. Like I said, it was a fun game to watch for the most part. There was a ejection, which there have been a handful of ejections in preseason. It's preseason. Why are these ejections happening? I know they're a little more stickler for the rules in preseason to kind of just kind of set a tone, but I feel like the refs have been a little whistle happy, particularly when it comes to the techs. Steve Kerr got thrown out. I'm not entirely sure why Steph Curry or Kevin Durant got their techs.
Steph Curry's tech is the one that set off Kerr.
Right, yeah. But I don't really understand why Curry got his tech to set off Kerr. But it benefited the Suns.
Right.
Well, and it was comedy gold.
Yeah, absolutely. It was amazing. I mean, because Kerr, once they started threatening, you could tell they started threatening that they were going to toss him. So then he said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to get tossed. And he walked out there, and you could read his lips as he's yelling at the referee saying, I don't want to be here anyway, so thank you. No, thank you. And he's waving to them. It was amazing. Mike Brown was trying to, quote-unquote, restrain him, and you could definitely see a few times Mike Brown kind of cracking a smile. If not actually trying to hold in a laugh, because it was really a hilarious situation.
You know, I'm pretty sure the players were all laughing.
Yeah, they absolutely were. Maybe that's why there are so many ejections right now. Maybe these players are doing the same thing. They're just not being as obvious about their just flat not wanting to be on the court in the game at that particular time as Steve Kerr was last night.
Well, I mean, Marcus Smart and Markieff Morris got in a fight.
Well, that'll do it too. Maybe they staged the fight. I don't know, Paul. Just a suggestion.
Just saying.
And you know, the other thing too, D'Anthony Melton got some run, scored 8 points, got 2 rebounds in just 11 minutes. So
yeah, and a nice block.
Your pick for starter, right? So
yeah. Hey, I don't know, man. I was taking a shot in the dark.
Why not? You would have looked like a genius if it came
true. Exactly. It was a Dragon Bender home run swing that I whiffed on.
Okay.
Just like Ryan McDonough did on Dragon Bender.
Oh, see, I was picturing Dragon Bender playing baseball, and I'm like, I don't get what you're doing here. All right, so nothing else from me, at least, really, on the game. Again, it's preseason. It's nice to have basketball, but we're about a week away from the start of the regular season, so let's get jazzed for that. And jumping off the game and kind of back into the whole GM situation, we've got James Jones, who, as we've already mentioned, has already been named the interim GM, and reports coming out that Sarver is leaning towards hiring him as the full-time GM as well. So, Paul, that leads me into a two-part question for you.
Okay.
First part, they're really basically the same question. First part, what do you think about James Jones being named interim GM? And the second part, what do you think about James Jones possibly becoming the full-time GM?
I mean, as interim GM, I mean, it makes sense. He's the guy. the next guy in line. I think technically, if you were to look at a hierarchy of by titles, his title is actually technically higher than McDonough's. So it really makes sense as a VP of
basketball operations,
taking over the GM duties when there's no longer a GM really makes sense.
What about the assistant GM?
Well, one of them was fired.
One of them's still there. I'm just saying, like, you think that guy's like, really? Come on.
I think that guy's more, if everything I heard and read over the last day or so is that he's more of like a numbers cap guy. Okay. He's not really, like, he's good at his assistant GM role because he's good at that piece of it.
Got it.
But running the whole shooting match is not really his thing. So that's where James Jones will kind of come in and kind of oversee that. So, I mean, they've got a, I don't want to say they have a target on their back, but they're under the gun to make a move of some type, it seems, because the impulsiveness of this move by Sarver leads us to believe that he wanted something done that wasn't getting done. So that something is probably going to get done, and the Suns are going to lose that trade. They may make them better on the court, mm-hmm. but whatever they have to give up to do it is going to be more than the production they're going to get on the court from that trade.
So that's what you think about him being the interim GM?
I feel like he's kind of been put in a little bit of a no-win scenario right now. It's very unfair to him to be thrust into that position right now. And then the idea of him becoming the GM long term, I mean, he seems to be a very smart guy. He has really good player relations. And from everything I understand from him as a player and his last couple years in the position that he's in now, but he's only been out of the league for 2 years. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to be a GM. You know, we've seen this with fresh coaches, Jason Kidd, Derek Fisher, Earl Watson. These guys who come straight out of the league, they can't do it as coaches. I can't see it being much different with a GM. Espo actually put out there a little bit that he'd be fine with the move if a president of basketball operations was brought in who was more seasoned in that role to guide Jones through the process as he's kind of learning the ins and outs of being a GM and whatnot. Kind of in the Lon Babbie role, but we saw how well that went. Granted, I want to say that was more of a Lance Blanks issue than a Lon Babbie issue.
That was an everybody issue, but continue.
So, I mean, if that ends up happening, I think I'd be more inclined to be a proponent of the move. If it's just a James Jones is just kind of now wears two hats or just it all gets merged into one and that's just kind of how it is, I'm going to be nervous until it's proven that he can actually do the job.
All right. That all makes good sense. I'm going to say, in regard to both questions, that I, frankly, and maybe this is just me relegating myself to something again, but you know what? I'm fine with James Jones.
I like him.
Whatever. Let's do it. Let's roll. Like you pointed out, we've got a guy who is very well respected in the league, respected by players, a smart guy who knows the game. And ultimately, I think really what's important there is that clear ability he has to develop these interpersonal relationships, which, as we discussed, Ryan McDonough clearly couldn't or wouldn't do.
Right. But then the question is, does he have the skills that McDonough did have? Of like
that? Well, yeah, sure. That's what we're going to find out, obviously. Yeah. But in terms of the fact that he's only been out of the league for a couple of years, you know, Steve Kerr got named the GM of the Suns. He'd only been in the league for 4 years.
Had he only been out in the league for 4 years?
That's what Wikipedia tells me. He retired in 2003, and he took the Suns' job in 2007.
Okay.
So, and then we recently just had in Philadelphia, Elton Brand named the GM there.
This is true,
and yeah. He's only been out of the league a few years. Now, he was the GM for like their G League team or something last year, but I can't imagine that that is exactly giving him a whole lot more prep for the NBA GM position than James Jones's job with the Suns when McDonough was still around.
The 76ers, Phoenix Suns, like parallels just keep coming up.
That's true. It's getting kind of creepy, actually.
It's
isn't
getting
it?
Really kind of creepy.
It's that Halloween season, man.
Just wait, we're gonna meet in the finals, and just like that'll be the end all be all of it. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Who really won
2020 finals?
This race?
Suns. Sixers? Is that's what we're calling? That is the boldest prediction we've made yet, Paul.
You're the one who threw out the year. I don't know if I'll commit to that year.
I'm done. I'm in. I'm all in. I'm gonna go to Vegas and put some money on that right now. Imagine the future bet on that's gotta be huge, right? But I just think that from the standpoint of being able to develop relationships, having a good reputation in the league, which again McDonough doesn't really have, nor does Sarver, so James Jones could be a good face when it comes to interacting with other teams, and a guy who obviously knows the game, knows players, has been around the league, won a lot in the league. I think if you're going to take a shot on a GM, and
not the worst guy to take a shot with,
yeah, exactly. And Sarver is going to impulse hire a GM or want to hire someone within, then by all means, James Jones is the guy. And ultimately, we'll see. I mean, he has a young core. He has a good young group of players.
He's set up well, yeah.
He's set up well. He just fill that spot with the point guard, show some stuff this year, and then go into free agency
next
year and see what happens. Exactly. So time will tell.
Yeah.
I mean, we can all sit here and judge right now, but ultimately we'll find out in a couple of years how we feel about James Jones as the Suns GM.
Right. I mean, I think the biggest thing just is we went through this already. We went through the situation where somebody was moved into a position where they may not have been ready for it, and then they were given the permanent position without doing proper due diligence. And obviously I'm speaking to Earl Watson, and now we're going around and doing that again. I mean, it's like the definition
of insanity.
I'm
shrugging my shoulders.
It's the definition of insanity.
Well, insane people are also geniuses sometimes.
Yes.
And a broken clock is right twice a day. So maybe this will be one of those
military time.
Broken clock incidents for Robert Sarver. Well, even if it's military time, then once. Sarver's still due, right? We'll see what happens with him as the GM. But
no, he was right when he hired Steve Kerr, and then everything after
right,
that.
There you go. Oh, shoot. So he's out of his... So hopefully it's not military time. All right. So you kind of got into this already, but... So what do you see as being on James Jones's plate at this point? You obviously talked about some shoe having to drop in terms of a roster move being made, a trade being made. Anything beyond that, any specific thoughts as to what that trade might ultimately be? I know you referenced overpaying and whatnot, but any other insight?
I mean, I'm expecting the move to be a point guard just because it's the more safe, like, kind of move of, like, there's options out there. I mean, yeah, there's going to have to be an overpay of some kind, because apparently the reports were that because all teams knew that the position the Suns were in, they were demanding an unprotected pick, and McDonough wasn't willing to give that up for like 1 year rentals.
Mm-hmm.
So, which, good on him standing his ground on that, but that may mean that we're looking at this year, next year, some type of first round pick being thrown in a deal for a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who I do like as a player. I don't think he's worth an unprotected first round pick though.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be the situation we're in, where it's clearly an overpay. But I think that the list of the guys who are possibly available is the same list that we've talked about in the past.
Sure. You know, looking into the future in terms of how James Jones might shake out as GM, one thing that comes to mind is, well, how much autonomy is he going to have?
Right.
Obviously, Sarver is known as a control freak. He meddles in day-to-day operations of the team and whatnot, going as far down the line as who should be playing, what types of, you know, lineups they should be using, etc. And you kind of referenced this earlier with McDonough, is that is if Sarver keeps changing the vision or changing what he wants to happen, and this GM's getting pulled in so many different ways and doesn't have the ability to get Sarver to kind of back off a little bit, then who's really the GM? It's Sarver at the end of the day. But I kind of wonder if there's perhaps going to be a different type, different level of respect, a different level of autonomy that James Jones might even have with even with Robert Sarver. I say that because of a few things. One being that it seems like they have a good relationship. Now, that could be because Sarver has high respect for his opinion in both the basketball world, business world, whatever the case might be, or because James Jones just sucks up to Robert Sarver all the time. It's one of those two. I'm hoping it's the former and not the latter. But with that level of respect to the fact that Sarver's known Jones for so long, he really brought him in, I think, and I think everyone would agree, to groom him to become a GM in the league and in all likelihood with the Suns at some point. So maybe he's going to get a little bit more flexibility. He's not going to get pulled in all those different directions. But I think at the end of the day, how good James Jones is going to be or how bad he's going to be as a GM is going to be in part dictated by how much it's actually him playing the GM role.
Right.
If Sarver continues to do what
to
he's
be
been doing,
shadow GM.
And I'm far from a Sarver hater. In fact, I might be the one person that actually likes Robert Sarver. I understand his shortcomings, but
he's
still
not a GM.
Don't mind him as an owner. I like him as an owner. He shouldn't be a GM. Exactly. So if Jones is basically just doing Sarver's bidding, then we know he's going to fail because Sarver has shown that he can't be a GM. If Jones gets to do his thing on his own, make the decisions that he thinks are the right decisions for the team, well, he still may fail, but at least in that regard, it's him on his own.
Right.
But with his background, with his relationships around the league, I think he's going to be a successful GM. I just hope it happens while he's still the GM of the Suns.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be the MO for a lot of it, is guys come into the Suns, get run out, and then they're productive elsewhere. So, I mean, if you look back, even like you look back at that 2013 team, so many of those players are still productive players around the league. I mean, none of them are really stars outside of maybe Dragic and IT for that. Well, no, that was the 14 team. But that 13 team, but they're all still really good players who are productive in the league outside of Miles Plumlee.
Oh, the Plumleys. How many of them are there? Like 70? I feel like there's
three
like 70
or four
of them.
Or Miles.
Okay, we don't need to do this. We really don't need to do this. Okay. So any final thoughts on James Jones, on the McDonough situation, on anything the Suns have been doing as of late?
I'm just on pins and needles waiting for that Woj bomb because you just know it's coming.
Right.
And that's really kind of where I stand with the whole thing right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, we can give Robert Sarver credit for one thing. As Suns fans, at least he's added a little bit more excitement to the preseason. Hey, we thought we were going to be sitting here having to watch, you know, six boring games of basketball before we got to the regular season. But Robert Sarver's like, hold my beer. Let's go ahead and spice things up for the Suns fans out there. So for that, Robert Sarver, we thank you. All right.
Yes.
And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode. I feel like we've covered what we can cover because we go like months without doing one and then we throw two out in a week. We're insane.
No. Well, I mean, a lot happened.
A lot happened. That's true. So, but at any rate, we appreciate all of you out there listening. Let's all look forward to an interesting and hopefully successful Sun season. And like I said at the beginning of the program, you can catch me on Twitter. So says Jay Paul
at Dervish of World,
and the pod is at Fanning the Flames and, or excuse me, Fan the Flames NBA. And as we always say in closing here, thank you very much for listening, everyone. And depending on when you're listening, have yourself a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening.
What's in the box? Just wanna hear